For the message today, I would like to kind of somewhat continue off of the last time, which has been a while. I was talking about defining God's love that time. And today I want to take it more into our response and try to give you some thoughts on our response to God as He works in our life. So I have a few questions to start with. I just want to encourage everyone to just relax, and hopefully I can share it with you that you can settle in and follow along. And thinking it's early enough today, maybe we can just have a few songs of worship afterwards. So think about that. I would really love to do that. Just really enjoyed what Scott brought out to us and how he brought us into worship there a few minutes ago. So to start with, I'd like to ask a question. Has anyone struggled in your life in the last year? Just a show of hands. Has anybody had any type of struggle? Personal, it could be. I mean, let's think of, when we think of struggle, let's not compare ourselves with what we heard last Sunday night, because we're not going to have any struggles if we compare to that. But there's, God knows us so intimately that He has a way of letting those things happen, and it draws us either towards Him or away from Him. In the last month, has anyone struggled? Anything in your life? Last week? See how it just goes on? And is it a bad thing? I don't believe it's a bad thing. I think it's a good thing. The last hour, I have somewhat struggle just to know that I'm coming up here. That's not a bad struggle, it's just I'm very aware of it. So I want to start in James 1, just a few verses there. It's kind of my focus. It's a few verses in James 1, starting in verse 2. Here's what it says: "My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into diverse temptations," various trials, or whatever you want to call it. I call it struggles. We can call it challenges, suffering. I mean, you put in the word for what is personal for you. I want this to be something that's personal for you. So read in between the lines if you have to. "Knowing this, that the trying of your faith worketh patience, but let patience," let's catch that word, let patience have a perfect work, that you may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing. In verse 5, "If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask," again, let's focus on, "let him ask of God that giveth to all men liberally." Now stop there. So God gives us liberally the wisdom that we ask of Him. Does He give us more than we are willing to ask for? Or is He allowing us to make that choice? Just things I want you to think about as we continue on into the message here. So I'm not sure why. James is probably because it's very practical, and I can connect with that. Just like Scott was saying earlier, we connect with what we've experienced, and I so agree with that. And I'm very much like that when it comes to songs, because I never grew up singing a lot, and when there's a song that really hits, it really hits hard for me, and it's very personal for me. And I can't get enough of that song for a while until I've heard it for a while. I'm going to jump over. That's kind of the focus point, is that those few verses. But I'm going to share a few other things just to kind of bring the picture together. A while back, Duke Duvall had a poem he shared on his daily devotional that he has. He has a 9-10 minute devotional actually every day for about 20 years now. And he shared a poem that, again, it connected with me. Just like Scott was saying, it connected in a way that I went online and I found it. And I'd just like to share it, because I think it kind of goes in, it brings out a struggle, and it's the shepherd and the lamb. Let's put ourselves in as the lamb in your mind, and the shepherd is God or Jesus Christ, whatever connects for you. So I'll just start reading this poem here. We're going to go through this first. "The shepherd loved his little lamb and gave it his tender care and followed it with his loving eyes as it wandered here and there." Can you imagine in your mind that God follows you with his loving eyes wherever you go, in the good places and in the bad. Can you connect with that, or can't you? Just asking those questions. And as he sat by his grazing flock, who so meekly his voice obeyed, the flock of sheep was obeying him very meekly, he pondered sadly his little lamb as it strayed. The little lamb had a loving heart and adored his shepherd true, but would turn aside and seek his own way as lambs so often do. I think of young people as this lamb. They know about God, they love that, and yet the world is calling out, and it's so enticing. With his gentle voice, the shepherd called to his loved and straying lamb, "Come back, little one, for you are not safe unless you are where I am." But still the little lamb would soon forget and unthinkingly wander away, and not really noticing what he did from the shepherd's side, would stray. Until one day the shepherd kind took his rod in his gentle hand. What he then did seemed so cruel that the lamb could not understand. This is here with the emotion of the poem here, it almost doesn't make sense what he does next. For with one sharp and well-aimed blow down the rod so swiftly came that it broke the leg of the little lamb and left it crippled and lame. The shepherd broke the lamb's leg. Isn't that mean? That's what most people would tend to think. Then the little lamb, with a cry of pain, fell down upon his knees and looked up at his shepherd as though to say, "Won't you explain this, please?" Then he saw the love in the shepherd's eyes as the tears ran down his face, and as he tenderly set the broken bone and bound it back in its place. Another thought I had here, maybe this connects because I'm a dad, and there's definitely a side to that it can connect with that, with little children. Now, as he was utterly helpless, he could not even stand. He must trust himself completely to his shepherd's loving hand. Then day by day, till the lamb was healed, from the flock he was kept apart and carried about in the shepherd's arms and cradled near to his heart. And the shepherd would whisper gentle words into his now listening ear. So now he could listen because he couldn't be distracted because he was focused, or he was helpless actually, had to be carried. I'll start over here. And the shepherd would whisper gentle words into his now listening ear. Thus he heard sweet words of love that the other sheep could not hear. He felt the warmth of the shepherd's arms and the beat of his faithful heart until it came a blessing to seem, by his weakness to be set apart. But every need of the little lamb by his shepherd so fully was met that through his brokenness he learned what he never again would forget. As the broken bones were healed and once more became whole and strong, wherever the shepherd's path would lead, the lamb would follow along. Thus, as the shepherd's side he walked so closely day by day, for once a lamb has a broken leg, it will never again go astray. For the cords of his love had bound it so in its hour of weakness and need that it had no desire to wander away when once again it was freed. Could it be you are broken today and you cannot understand the painful blow of the shepherd's rod, nor believe it came from his hand? God will not do anything mean to us. He only seeks by this painful thing for a time to call you apart, to cradle you close in his loving arms and draw you near to his heart. So look up into your shepherd's eyes and earnestly seek his face and prove in the hour of your weakness and need the sufficiency of his grace. For as you are born in his loving arms and carried there day by day, he will bind you so close with the cords of his love that never again will you stray. So that's the end of that poem. It really connected with me, and I just want to share that because I think it flows with this message a little bit. You see how faithful that little lamb was after that experience. So now, let's go in the Old Testament and want to read of another young person that was very faithful, and it's very astounding. Could anybody guess who that young person was? Yes, it's Joseph. I've always, as far back as I remember, I've enjoyed in the Amish church when we had Atlingsgemeinde, it would be, they would go through that story. And I know my dad actually loved to tell that story. So I know it obviously connected. I've never talked to him about it, but maybe one of these days we'll get there. So a few more thoughts on suffering, because we're going to see a lot of suffering that he did that he was totally innocent of. And it was, if you look at the world's eyes today, you'd say it was not fair what he went through. So in Philippians 1:29, I'm just going to read a few verses here that connect with that. For unto you it is given in the behalf of Christ not only to believe on him, but also to suffer for his sake. And then in 1 Timothy 4:10, and it says for to suffer for his sake. And yet I think a lot of suffering, what's so amazing to me is the suffering we go through is ultimately to help us learn how to draw unto God. Is where a lot of the suffering really comes that happens in our lives, and God uses it for his glory. So 1 Timothy 4:10, for therefore we both labor and suffer reproach because we trust in the living God who is the Savior of all men, especially of those that believe. It's just another few words there of how we labor and suffer reproach because we trust in the living God. And we're willing to go through that because we know ultimately he has our best interest. And that's what is so special and I think that's, as I learn more about songs and things that Scott was sharing earlier, we connect with songs maybe that we didn't in the past because we see what God is actually doing in our life, and it touches us. So well, let's start in Genesis 37, and I'm going to read part of his story. I mean, it's so many chapters, I don't want to really go through all of it and won't have time, but I'd like to just read part of his story and bring out some of the unfairness that was going on in his life, but what God was doing ultimately in the end of that. So in 37, I'll start in verse 2. These are the generations of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brethren, and the lad was with the sons of Bilhah, of the sons of Zilpah, and his father's wives. And Joseph brought unto his father their evil report. Now Israel loved Joseph more than all his children, because he was the son of his old age, and he made him a coat of many colors. See, right there, it wasn't fair to Joseph that he was loved more than the others. It wasn't fair that his dad had four wives. But that's all beside the point. And when his brethren saw that his father loved him more than all his brethren, they hated him. So his brothers hated him. Again, that wasn't fair to him. He couldn't do anything about that he was of the favored woman. And that is, I believe, partially of why he was favored, if not all of it. And I'm guessing there might have been more of a connection, but that was definitely part of it. And he could not speak and could not speak peaceably unto him. So his brothers just hated him with a passion. And Joseph dreamed a dream, and he told his brethren, and they hated him yet the more. And he said unto them, hear, I pray you, this dream which I have dreamed, for behold, we were binding sheaves in the field, and lo, my sheaf arose and stood upright, and behold, your sheaf stood round about and made obeisance to my sheaf. Again, that dream, he couldn't help it, he had that dream. It's just amazing how God worked in his life. And his brethren said to him, shalt thou indeed reign over us, or shalt thou indeed have dominion over us? And they hated him yet the more for his dreams and for his words. It just increased the hatred towards him. And he dreamed yet another dream and told his brethren and said, behold, I have dreamed a dream. I have dreamed a dream more, and behold, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars made obeisance to me. So now he's talking about the sun and the moon. It's just almost getting worse here. And he told it to his father and to his brethren. One thing is amazing, though. He was young enough and full of fire or something that he wasn't afraid to tell them anything, because he obviously did. And it just increased the whole issue there. And his father rebuked him. There he even got scolded for it, and said to him, "What is this dream that thou hast dreamed? Shall I and thy mother and thy brethren indeed come to bow down ourselves to thee, to the earth?" And his brethren envied him, but his father observed the saying. I think his father suspected there's something going to be happening here, that God is doing this. That's what I see here. And his brethren went to feed their father's flock in Shechem. And Israel said unto Joseph, now Israel, that would have been Joseph's dad there, "Do not thy brethren feed the flock in Shechem? Come, and I will send thee unto them." And he said to him, "Here am I." Here again, you know, he knew that his brothers hated him, and he knew he'd have to go over there himself, and yet he obeyed. The amazing thing about his story is the obedience that Joseph had. And that obedience had to come with a trust in God that is phenomenal. And he said to him, "Go, I pray thee, see whether it be well with thy brethren and well with the flocks, and bring me word again." So he sent him out of the vale of Hebron, and he came to Shechem. And a certain man found him, and behold, he was wandering in the field, and the man asked him, saying, "What seekest thou?" So you can imagine he went over, you know, they didn't have highways and roads and traffic like we do today. So he went over the fields, however that looked, I don't know. And the people noticed this lad wandering around there, not knowing where he's going. The local obviously understood that and went and asked him what he's looking for. And he said, "I seek my brethren. Tell me, I pray thee, where they feed their flocks." And the man said, "They are departed hence from here. For I heard them say, 'Let us go to Dothan.' And Joseph went after his brethren and found them in Dothan. And when he saw them afar off, even before he came near unto them, they conspired again against him to slay him." So here they were trying to get rid of him already. As soon as they seen it, before he was even there, they were already talking about how they're going to get rid of him. And they said one to another, "Behold, this dreamer cometh. Come now, therefore, and let us slay him and cast him into some pit. And we will say, some evil beast has devoured him, and we shall see what will become of his dreams." They had not forgotten those dreams, and they were determined they're going to get rid of him before those dreams come true. I would almost dare to say that they probably suspected something's going to happen, and they wanted to wipe him out of their sight before it happens. And Reuben was the oldest of all the boys, heard it. So I just don't know for sure, but I would say he probably felt responsible. And he delivered him out of their hands and said, "Let us not kill him." And Reuben said unto them, "Shed no blood, but cast him into this pit that is in the wilderness, and lay no hand upon him, that he might rid him of their hands to deliver him to his father again." He had intentions to take him, to send him back home. And it came to pass, when Joseph was come into his brethren, that they stripped Joseph of his coat of many colors that was on him. They took him and cast him into a pit, and the pit was empty, and there was no water in it. And they sat down to eat bread, and they lifted up their eyes and looked, and behold, a company of Ishmaelites came from Gilead with their camels, bearing spicery, balm, and myrrh, going to carry it down to Egypt. And Judah said unto his brethren, "What profit is it if we slay our brother and conceal his blood? Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother and our flesh." And his brethren were content. Then they passed by the Midianites, merchantmen, and they drew and lifted up Joseph out of the pit and sold Joseph to the Ishmaelites for 20 pieces of silver. And they brought Joseph into Egypt. And Reuben returned unto the pit, and behold, Joseph was not in the pit, and he rent his clothes. And he returned unto his brethren and said, "The child is not, and I, whither shall I go?" And they said, they took Joseph's coat and killed a kid of the goats and dipped the coat in the blood. So they were trying to set up something to hide what they did. And they sent the coat of many colors and brought it to their father and said, "This have we found. Know now whether it be thy son's coat or no." And he knew it and said, "It is my son's coat. An evil beast has devoured him, and Joseph is without doubt rent into pieces." So they set this up so that they don't have to tell their father what they did. And they hid it from their own dad. And Jacob rent his clothes and put on sackcloth upon his loins and mourned for his son many days. Again, remember, he was his favored son, and he was connected heart to heart with his son, and he really admired him, I would say. And he wanted what was best for him, and all of a sudden he was torn out of his hands. And all his sons and all his daughters rose up to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted. And he said, "For I will go down into the grave unto my son mourning." Thus his father wept for him. And the Midianites sold him into Egypt unto Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh's and captain of the guard. So in chapter 37, he was 17 years old in this season here. And in just that chapter, there are at least five times that he had difficult things that he could have, in my mind, he could have rejected God, but he didn't. The first one was, and I might have missed a few, but brothers despised him because dad favors him. That was one thing that was against him. Brothers mock him for his dreams. God's goes alone to find his brothers, knowing that they hate him. When he gets there, they're going to hate him, and yet he obeys. They take his coat and put him in a pit. That pit was a deep hole in the ground without water, and just put him there, and they're sitting up there eating their food and just having a merry time. And then they turn around and sell him to the Ishmaelites, and then the Ishmaelites sell him to Potiphar. All this time, he's like 17 years old. Can you imagine going back to 17 years old? And some of you might be 17 years old. No, I don't think we have any 17-year-olds, do we? You are 70. Okay, I'm sorry. So we have one 17-year-old here. Two of the girls are, okay. Anyways, I remember 17 years old, and I cannot comprehend what he went through. Now I'm 34, and in chapter 39, we're going to read, get close to that point in life, and he still had not seen his family. In my mind, why wouldn't you just run away? Why not? Surely he could have run away, been better than trying to live with people he didn't know. Then I asked myself the question, was he so sold out for the Lord that he was going to go wherever God takes him and be faithful? Just a thought. So in 39, and Joseph was brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh and captain of the guard, and an Egyptian, bought him of the hands of the Ishmaelites, which had brought him down thither. And the Lord was with Joseph. And this is one of the things I want to bring out. The Lord was with Joseph. That says it four times, I think, in this chapter. Three or four times, yes. And I believe Joseph knew that. He was committed to doing what God had for him. And he was a prosperous man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw the Lord was with him, and the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. And Joseph found grace in his sight, and he served him, and he made him overseer over his house, and all that he had put into his hand. And it came to pass from the time that he had made him overseer in his house, and over all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was upon all that he had in the house and in the field. And he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and knew not aught he had, save the bread which he did eat. So everything was given to Joseph in that house to take care of, except for the food that Potiphar had. And Joseph was a goodly person and well favored. I guess there's one more. We'll get to that part. And it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph, and she said, "Lie with me." He was attractive simply because of his obedience to God. He was a very attractive young lad. And Potiphar's wife noticed that. But he refused, and he said to his master's wife, "Behold, my master wotteth not what is with me in the house, and he hath committed all that he hath to my hand. There is none greater in this house than I, neither hath he kept back anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" His biggest concern was that he sins against God. He was not going to do that. That is astounding as a young person, and it's very inspiring for me. And it came to pass that she spake to Joseph day by day. She didn't give up, that he hearkened not unto her to lie by her or to be with her. Another very inspiring thing there for me to observe is he even tried his best to not be alone with her. Very, very wise. I think it's a very wise counsel. These scriptures in the Old Testament are here for a reason, and they are for us to observe and learn from. And it came to pass about this time that Joseph went into the house to do his business, and there was none of the men of the house there within. And she caught him by his garment. So there was obviously time that she could grab him. Lie with me. And he left his garment in her hand and fled and got him out. He literally dropped his coat and left. He was not going to be captured in that situation. And again, here he did the right thing. And by doing the right thing, caused him some serious consequences. Again, they looked bad, but ultimately they weren't bad. And it came to pass, when she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and was fled forth, that she called unto the men of her house and spake unto them, saying, he hath brought in an Hebrew unto us to mock us. He came in unto me to lie with me, and I cried with a loud voice. And it came to pass, when he heard that I lifted up my voice and cried, that he left his garment with me and fled and got him out. And she laid up his garment by her until his lord came home. She lied right in front of everyone there, trying to get him in trouble because she was angry that he would not do it. And she spake unto him according to these words, saying, the Hebrew servant which thou hast brought unto us came in unto me to mock me. And it came to pass, I lifted up my voice and cried, that he left his garment with me and fled out. And it came to pass, when his master heard the words of his wife, which she spake unto him, saying, after this manner did thy servant to me, that his wrath was kindled. Potiphar was angry at that point. And you know what? If it would have been the truth, he would have had, you'd almost think he had a right to be angry if that really would have been the truth. And Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, a place where the king's prisoners were bound. And he was there in the prison. But the Lord was with Joseph. Here it says that again. And showed him mercy. In our eyes, you'd say there's no mercy there, but yet there was mercy there. Just very amazing how God does that. And gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners that were in the prison. Whatsoever they did there, he was a doer of it. Again, he was in charge almost immediately. And the keeper of the prison looked not to anything that was under his hand, because the Lord was with him. And that which he did, the Lord made it to prosper. So there, this story goes on. I could just go on and on, but I'm not going to. So in this chapter of the next season of Joseph's life there, he had to adjust to a new language, a completely different culture, with no family contact, this young boy, or young man at this point. Then he had his boss's wife lust after him. Then she lies about it and puts him in prison, upsets his guy who almost probably looked up to in a sense, because the guy obviously trusted him. So obviously there was some type of connection there that I think was respect for each other, at least because of how they worked together. And then when he's in prison, now he had to go to prison. And in the prison, the butler and the baker from Potiphar were also put in there. And then he explains their dreams, and they get out, and he's still there. And he begs with them, because I would almost imagine that the king, that he knew that Potiphar would, if he would say something, that he would consider him again. It's almost like he really wanted to get out of there. And for 2 years, the butler forgot about him. So now, after 2 years, the butler remembers him because Potiphar had a dream. And we can go on into this whole thing here. And yeah, it's just amazing the journey that God had him on there and how he worked. And I want to go to Genesis 41 and just read a few verses to capture a glimpse of Joseph's heart in all these years. He was 30 years old when he came out of the prison. So I don't know all the time, like some of you might know that better in what sequence, all that, as far as how old he was when the situations happened. So we're slamming a lot of trials into a short period here, which is not necessarily fair, but it gives us a short picture of what was going on there. But in 41, verse 51, is where Joseph was 30 years old when Potiphar got him back out of prison and made him the top guy in Egypt, and he gave him a wife, one of the Egyptian women. In 51, it says, Joseph called the name of the firstborn Manasseh, for God, said he, hath made me forget all my toil and all my father's house. So this is how many years later? He was 30-something. And he named a son after what his heart was wrestling with all these years. And the name of the second called he Ephraim. Again, for God hath caused me to be fruitful in the land of my affliction. So all those years, he called that a land of affliction. And yet he was faithful. All that time he was faithful to God. And that is, I guess, is what I want to share with you is, can we be faithful in our trials, in our minute little trials that we face? Some of us have bigger trials. We all have big trials, personally, intimately, that God is working in our life. Might be big for us, small for other people. But I don't like to say it's a small trial, because I believe it is very intentional in helping us grow in our life together. So let's go back to James again and just read those verses again, just to kind of reconnect with those verses. My brethren, count it all joy when ye fall into diverse temptations, knowing this, that the trying of your faith worketh patience. So in Joseph's story, did it work patience? I believed it worked tremendous patience, or he would have run away. If we run away from these trials, was that God's intent? I'll just let you ponder on that. Can he work out what he desires? Are we willing to allow God to work out what he desires? But let patience have her perfect work. See, it's letting, let patience, let God do his perfect work in you, that ye may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing, that you can be complete in Christ Jesus as your Lord and Savior, if you allow God to work in your life. If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God, that giveth to all men liberally. Let's not forget that he giveth us wisdom liberally. He's very willing to give it to you if we simply ask. I think that's all I have for the message today.